Welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated, and with me today, I have the Professor.
Hello.
And BPM.
Hello, Internet.
And is me, the DJ. How are you all going?
I'm going well. Did some art. I'm chilling today.
Very, very nice. Very nice. How are you, Professor? How are you?
I'm doing absolutely wonderfully. Sitting here in the air conditioning because screw going outside today.
At least you have air conditioning. I got fans and windows here.
I know. Likewise. It doesn't work well. It doesn't work well. Oh, but then although the bright side is BPM, we both have the last laugh. But unlike the professor, he has to pay the power bill.
True.
Yeah, I'm gonna regret this in a couple of months.
Oh boy, and we'll be sitting there going, I don't have to deal with this. All right, so for this week we're going to be talking about further updates on the SAG-AFTRA AI backflip and Ubisoft versus game ownership, the AI anime war hitting mainstream media, and the anti-venom backfire. So on to our first story. So Professor, you've got an update about the SAG-AFTRA AI backflip.
So last week when we spoke about the SAG-AFTRA deal, we weren't entirely sure what the terms of the deal were. This week I'll have some links in the show notes that will go into it in more depth. But just to quickly summarize, we were right about this cutting into the union's strength, because by replacing actors with digital replicas, we're going to see fewer actual actors joining the union, because there are fewer acting jobs to go around. The deal seems to be more along the lines of a licensing deal, so you can license your personality and your likeness to a particular project, or which you will get paid for, whether you are acting or your likeness is acting.
I'm kind of confused here. So basically, you will be paid for your performance and whatever similar likeness to that whatever future likeness.
If they use a copy of you, they have to pay you for it.
Okay, that's reasonable.
That's something.
Yeah, that's something.
Now, the other part of the contract that has got people concerned is that it has a provision for entirely AI-generated actors.
Oh,
boy.
The good news is the design for AI-generated actors currently requires you to license each body part that you borrow from an actual actor.
What?
Yes, this article describes it as a Frankenstein.
So again, we're going to get like Corpse Bride vibes here.
So let me get this straight. So basically, I will have that. So if I were to create an AI, if I were to create an actor using AI, if it has a head of Brad Pitt, the arms of Arnie, the body of Ryan Gosling, and the rest of them, and the legs of Usain Bolt.
Yeah, which has got me questioning how this will actually work with actual AI going forward. Because the way AI works is it's very hard to tell once you've pulled something out of an AI what the AI based that on. So sure, we can say this actor looks a bit like they've borrowed features from X, Y, and Z. But how do we prove that?
Yeah. I mean, if it was like visible, if there's like visible tattoos and stuff maybe.
Yeah, that reminds me, actually, there was a big stink about whether tattoos could be licensed in creating the likeness of a character for video games.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I don't remember all the details, but last year there was a few articles about that because they were creating wrestlers who used the tattoos of the real wrestler. And there was a lawsuit about that, whether you could use that as a... Is it part of the likeness of the wrestler, in which case you don't need to license it? under the terms of the law at that time? Or is it something else which you do need the license?
And not to mention, the other question you would have to wonder is, you know how like some people have their hands insured or their body insured in case if anything goes wrong? Like, I wonder how insurance companies are going to deal with this as well.
I'm assuming some will be rubbing their greedy little paw hat, like, we can abuse this.
Yeah, what happens when there's a hack and the AI likeness is stolen? Like, we've already seen those crypto scams using famous people's faces on Instagram and stuff.
Yep.
What happens when a full body replica with all of this high tech stuff gets stolen? It feels weird saying that it's high tech compared to the AI that steals people's faces to create crypto scams.
Oh, but then, okay, well, what's the difference between this and a deep fake, though?
This is a more advanced deep fake.
Oh, so deep fake is, the version of deep fakes we see on the internet, that's just entry level. This is just university level.
Yeah, so that's why it feels weird calling it high tech, because a couple of years ago, deep fakes were extremely high tech, but it's moving very quickly.
I'm just looking at this article here, and the contract states that both act producers and the union acknowledge the importance of human performance in motion pictures and the potential impact on employment. It also stipulates that the union will be notified and given an opportunity to bargain in good faith if producers are considering casting an AI performer. That's a bit of a gray area there.
Yep. The union will probably push for real actors to be used, and the movie makers will probably push for AI actors because then they completely control it and it's cheaper.
Yep. Whatever is cheaper is the best position. So not real.
Look at it from a producer's point of view. Let's say, for example, you're a Hollywood actor and you've got sustained a facial injury, for example. Maybe the AI performer could work in that aspect.
Oh, like an AI that replaces your face with your face before injury?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more sensible, I guess. But then there's also the problem of that's my face you're using, even though it's my face and I'm the one using it. I don't know. It's weird.
But then, if you go to the other end of the spectrum, though, you would get you hear stories of producers and actors going absolute would fight in every movie project, right? You hear stories like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you imagine a movie producer getting absolutely cheesed off to the sets where he uses the AI model of the said actor and just wonks it badly? It's not that hard to think about it, though. It's not that hard to think, given the situation, given the circumstances.
It isn't hard to think, but also it could complicate things even more, wouldn't it, with the relationship between the producers and the actors?
Yeah. How about you, Professor? What do you think?
Well, like I said last week, I think we're going to see some major societal changes because of AI.
that's a given. That's a given. So what else did they, are there any other details at the about this deal?
I think we've covered it.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting is how, so given the amount of details that we've given, have you seen any like feedback from the actors or anything like that?
Well, they're still not entirely happy with it. I haven't actually been following any actors since last week, so I don't know what they've been saying about it entirely. But according to the sources we're putting in the show notes, it's going to harm the union because there are fewer actual humans in the union, which is bad for the actors as a whole. So I feel like this is a case where we're seeing a societal change and we're trying to protect the people who are affected by it. But ultimately, who knows? We're not going to be able to do that forever.
Yes, but as I think it's going to happen because people are human. The human gene makes us greedy fuckers as all hell. But I guess if it does happen, as long as it's regulated and properly covers all the royalties and so forth for the actors, because my heart's with the actors. I don't watch things without actors. I don't know why. But it's, yeah, as long as it's regulated, it could work. But at the same time, regulation is superficial as well.
The BPM over here in terms of if there's regulation, but the question is going to be how much nuance is going to be in the regulation. Like, is it going to be cut and dry, or are they going to add a lot of there's going to be so many layers to this.
Oh, there's going to be layers and loopholes and cheat sheets and whatever. I don't know.
Oh yeah,
that's much more of a lawyer's idea brain, not mine.
And what's going to be, and with this, what's going to be even harder is trying to market this thing to the general public. Can you imagine trying to market the next Marvel movie starring an AI actor?
I don't think people are going to care that much.
As long as it's not done by Disney, I think it'd be fine.
I mean, I recalled this morning with the recent Flash movie, when they had like a couple of AI actors in there. For example, Christopher Reeve's face was in that movie. It was all AI.
Which movie?
The Flash. The one with Ezra Miller in it.
Yeah, we've also had Gemini Man, which has they deep faked young Will Smith's face onto some other actor.
Hmm. But in this case, though, mind you, but then at least they had consent with Will Smith. But for this case, though, apparently, I just saw Reeve's children never watched the Flash CGI cameo of Christopher Reeve, and they weren't even notified about it.
Oof. Actually, same thing last week. What's his name? George Carlin had an AI show come out.
No.
And his daughter's like, who did this? Who gave you permission to do this?
Yeah, that's going down a very dark, slippery road.
But we also see with this sort of stuff, pushing out younger actors, because they're going to want the people who have been around for ages and have a name to them. Where are the young actors going to break in?
Netflix?
The indie scene? The indie scene? If they really want to like pursue the craft, the indie scene would be the best place to go to. For now.
Until the AI stuff is cheap enough for indies to do it.
Isn't they sort of start doing stuff similar to that with passed away musicians like what's her name? Went to rehab girl. Can't remember the act.
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, they do like to put into made her like an AI type thing of that, which has got fans of her really pissed off.
Really?
That was way back though.
I got a serious question for you guys. Are we starting to see like an AI arms race at this point?
Yeah. All of the companies making AI are obviously racing to have the best AI faster. Remember a couple of AI companies were pushing recently for a AI moratorium. I reckon that was just so that they had a chance to catch up.
Hmm.
They'd be like, no, we totally won't keep developing for the next 6 months and work on it in secret so that they have a chance to catch up with the people who are out in front.
Yeah, it's the damage. I think the damage is with it. I think, but back to what we were talking about to the earlier topic, I reckon given what we see, given the details right now, do you feel okay? Given what the details right now, do you feel sorry for SAG doing this, or do you have a better understanding of SAG compared to last time?
I think they're doing what they can.
Yeah.
At this point, given the new details, Yeah, you're right. They're doing what they can, but at the same time, it's like it feels like they're selling out, but then on face value. But at least it's not as egregious as what's going on at Ubisoft, though.
I don't know. What's the AAA companies who don't care about gamers doing?
Well, not that anybody expected better from Ubisoft. But they've decided to go all in on subscriptions and say that we need to get comfortable not owning games.
Wow.
All right. I don't know if Ubisoft is listening out there on the internet, but what the fuck are you thinking? And get wrecked. Hopefully you go out of business. Because no one will buy your shit.
Spoken like a true gamer.
Dude, I have 1,000 hours of Monster Hunter. Of course I'm a gamer.
So fill us in on this one, Professor.
So Ubisoft has a subscription service called Ubisoft Plus. It comes in two separate flavors, Premium and Classics. Premium is for their newest games and costs $18, which I assume is USD. And Classics, which has previously been available on PlayStation, is back catalog games like Far Cry 6. How old is Far Cry 6? Is that back catalog, really?
I gotta see this. Far Cry 6 was released, wow, 2021.
Not that old.
Not that old.
There was something like original Halo, then I could see that.
Anyway, that one costs $8 a month.
$10 cheaper. Wow.
Yeah, but you don't get to play the new games. It's the old games.
When their writing was good.
So it does come with the premium editions, which I assume means DLC and all of that included. And Ubisoft Rewards, not that I've ever met anyone who cares about those. And it's cross-platform. But that's still not enough to convince me to give up my ownership, which I say with air quotes because we don't really own digital games anyway. But I'm still, call me old-fashioned, but I prefer to own my games.
Yep. I'm sort of on the side of that as well.
Yeah.
I buy a game so I can keep playing it and not keep paying a monthly fee. That's why I dropped out of World of Warcraft. And any other subscription online MMOs. I can't afford that shit.
Yeah. I feel like it's still going to work out cheaper for you to wait a year or two and buy a game on sale than it's going to be to get the subscription.
Mm.
Especially Ubisoft games, which are already tons of padding.
Especially at least they complete games. Somewhat.
You mean like the Assassin's Creed games, which are just basically money pits at this point?
Yes. Well, they've always been on money pits. Like, let's just do... The story just goes on and on. Let's put more stuff in because people like it and we want money. And their writing just gets worse and worse. Mm-hmm. I stopped playing after like Assassin's Creed 2, bro.
I like this quote that one of the directors is saying. We looked at the consumer behavior and how people were interacting with our offer, and we saw an opportunity for us to evolve.
I'm sure that translates to we saw an opportunity to make more money. Now, there are things that would sound valuable here, that you don't lose your progress. You can save your files. You mean the thing I've been doing ever since games came with save features? And ever since Steam came out, well, probably not from launch, but as long as I can remember using Steam, it's had cloud saves for free.
Yes, it has.
So they're asking you to pay money for cloud saves, which Nintendo already does.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are upset about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with I want to say something about cloud saves. I am having a really hard time with cloud saves, especially when I'm starting to play Cyberpunk and I don't like the progress. Every time I try and delete the cloud save, it somehow comes back and I'm going, I already deleted you stupid idiot. Why are you coming back? And no matter how many times I delete it, it still comes back. And I try telling the people, going like, hey guys, the cloud save keeps coming back. What do I do? And they keep telling me, oh, do the same process that you've been doing. I'm at my wit's end, guys. Please try and fix it. Oh, I hate cloud saves. They're so tiresome.
Well, you just start a new game. That's all you need to do.
That's just a bad implementation.
Yeah.
And the other problem with cloud saves is that, like, what happens if you want to play like a game of Zelda and you're in the middle of buttfuck nowhere Like, is your cloud safe and you can't get in that access? Like, what are you going to do next?
That's why your saves are local and on the cloud.
Yeah. But the problem is, like, when it comes to local saves, is like when you try and get back into civilization and you try and you upload your local to the cloud save, sometimes you'll get situations where it doesn't coalesce, if you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You mean when your local save doesn't match your cloud save?
Yeah.
Then do what Steam does and give you an option that tells you, hey, your local save is 3 days newer than your cloud save. Do you want to replace it? This is a solved problem. Good game clients, aka not Epic, let you have cloud saves and don't have issues with it. This is really, it all boils down to another push to streaming and subscriptions so that you don't ever actually own anything. And I don't think they're right about this, because they say that people are used to not owning their CDs or their DVDs.
But right.
People got extremely upset just a few weeks ago when Discovery announced that they were rescinding the license to Discovery shows through Sony's store, and that everyone who had bought stuff on Sony's store was about to lose access to it.
Ow. But also, another problem with this whole going not owning your own games subscription all the way through, what about the retail stores out there in the world that buy, like EB, JB Hi-Fi, all those? Most of they, like eBay, EB Games, well, it's in its name. It's all about games, right?
Yeah.
So if they're all subscription-based, they're just going up, and you can just take it all and let those business goes down, and then we've got more unemployment. Yay.
I think I don't think
they care, though.
Yeah,
because that's margin.
Yeah,
if they can sell you a game for $80 and cut out the margin of shipping and running an EB game store, then they will sell you the game for $80. EB games can sell it for $80, but they're not going to make as much money through EB games. So that's why they want to push you through buying through their own store.
Mm.
Okay, let me play a bit of devil's advocate here. Okay, now consider this. Okay. Let's say you buy a physical copy of a DVD. You can the downside with it would be you can burn it and copy it and stuff. What if this is an element to try and save the gaming industry from piracy?
Well, it's like, but yeah, pirates would find a way either way. It's kind of what they do.
Netflix hasn't stopped piracy,
even with the whole blackened the screens and whatnot.
Yeah, pirates find ways around that.
It's harder with a game. Yeah.
Because the game's interactive. But pirates will find a way.
Hmm. I'm just reading this. And what's another thing, the interesting part with Ubisoft pushing for no ownership is the whole idea that this is what the consumer wanted. What the consumer wants. I'm still reading this article. I love this quote here. He says, the point is not to force users to go down one route or another. We offer purchase, we offer subscription, and it's the gamer's preference that is important here. We are seeing some people who choose to subscribe now, but it all works.
Yeah, for now.
I want to see his data to back up that position. And I was going to say with the whole physical ownership of video games, it's what the higher ups of the gaming companies don't understand is the fact that we love we love holding a physical copy of the game to try and remember all the good stuff that we played. Like, let's say, for example, a while back, I held a N64 cartridge of Perfect Dark. I had so many fun memories playing that game.
Yeah, that's another thing we've lost with the transition to digital. We've lost the feelies. Games used to come with, like, little trinkets. Not just in the collector's edition, in the base game as well. And now you just don't get that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, also the other fact of the matter is, like, you're taking away the whole physical copy is you're also killing jobs of artists who do cover arts for these wonderful games.
Mm.
Well, the cover art still shows up on the store.
It still shows up on the thingy, yeah, but then like...
The store, DJ. It's not a hard word. Five letters. Come on, sound it out.
on the sure, it comes out on the store, sure. But it wouldn't it be cool just to see it on paper and seeing 1,000 people rather than just putting it on Google and just saving it as a copy on a net on your hard drive?
Yeah, I still like looking at game cases.
And the other problem, and the other thing I've also noticed with when people are trying to transition to digital is that you look at the physical copies, you can't edit you can't edit stuff in a game. Let's say, for example, if something problematic were to come out in a game later on, you will see game companies going, oh, because of this problematic nature of this game, we're going to release new digital copies of this game with the edited version of the game, which removes some aspects of the game that's problematic.
Yeah, the live service games designed in a way that makes it really easy to just change it, which is a problem for game preservation.
Yeah, and you're gonna get the result of that is going to be, oh, I played this Call of, like, let's say for example, if Call of Duty decides to ban a certain section of a game that of a certain cutscene, you're like, oh, so you didn't see the cutscene in the physical release? Like, what cutscene in the physical release? Oh, this cutscene, like, you know. You guys get what I mean?
Yeah. But also, this whole subscription idea is mainly embraced by the tech-oriented companies or non-gamer games. Non-gamer companies. So that's like Ubisoft, Microsoft.
Ah, yeah.
And possibly Bethesda. I'm not sure on that. Jeez. Don't know where they're going. Then you got other companies like Rise Up Studio, ReLogic, Flowfire, and of course Larian, who all oppose the whole subscription thing because they want to try and keep the game-friendly approach, which gives them more people to sort of lean towards those type of games because it's just appreciative, I guess. Yay to Reddit. Things you learn.
Yes, I think the indies are going to save us here.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Or the companies that self-publish. When I say, developers that self-publish is what I mean.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the death of nostalgia.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I think the death of nostalgia is a funny way to put it when they're making a big deal about their classics line, which, to be fair, does include only games from a couple of years ago as well. But at the same time, we're seeing remakes and remasters of all of the classic games.
We've lost some
games that haven't been preserved, but at the same time, we are seeing attempts to preserve them from the companies that made them, which I appreciate.
Oh no! I agree with the whole like they do remakes and remasters. But let's look at some of the examples they've attempted it though, like GTA, for example,
or the new Saints Row game. They completely fucked up.
Remember GTA Remastered and how much of an effort that was?
I never played it. Not a GTA one. I always went Saints.
Yeah, the one that had all the AI texture upscaling.
the definitive edition, as they called it.
Was not good.
And then what was it? Then there was the Halo Master Chief Edition.
They fixed that eventually, though.
Yeah, but then that was after how much of an ire that was.
Yeah, it took some time, but they did fix it.
Yeah.
Look, they shouldn't be releasing it unfinished, but they do fix it. So half points.
But that's just what it seems to be going, or seems the route that big companies are taking. They produce a game that's not finished. It's been arguments and blood feuds about it. Unfinished games getting popped up at full price all over the internet for months or even years now. Nobody wants that. And that's when AAA companies, and it's mostly AAA companies, surprisingly, like, lyrics to one of those songs, wake the fuck up. People will not buy unfinished games or unpolished games.
Yeah, who could forget Fallout 76? Oh.
I just veto that. That's non-existent as a game. That's just, I don't know what that is. That was just a thing.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to say with in terms of Ubisoft, going, saying no to subscription games, saying no to physical copies. It's the other problem is like most of Ubisoft's successes come from physical copies. It's like biting the hand that fed you.
Well, companies do what companies do. All we can do is yell at them and see if they listen. Most of the time, they don't.
What do you think, Professor?
I think to summarize that subscriptions are the future because that's what the companies want to do. We don't have the power to fight back.
I totally disagree on that one. I think we do have the power to fight back. There's a thing called vote with your wallets, people. Vote with your wallets.
That doesn't work. It's too hard to get people radicalized enough to vote with their wallets. There's that famous meme of the Steam group boycott Modern Warfare 2, I think it was, where 75% of the players are playing Modern Warfare 2.
Wait, what? That actually became a meme?
Yeah, people post it whenever someone brings up talking by your wallets, voting by your wallets, because it doesn't work.
Okay, fair enough.
We can't really do much when it comes to those big companies, yeah. It's just the way it is.
Just stick with the indies.
fair enough.
Self-publishing developers.
All right, anyways, let's move on to the next topic. So, in the spirit of AI and voting with your wallets and getting angry at companies, it's now crept into the anime world.
Oh, that's another deep, deep hole people will be falling into and won't be able to crawl back out of, especially on those popular animes that have massive fan base.
Uh-huh. So the story goes, Western televisions and AI anime localizers have been under fire for injecting woke language into dubs. And some of the companies are thinking of implementing AI as a way to limit the human intervention and to remove it entirely. And let me put some context onto this. So on December 21st, on the official X, I'm gonna say X, even though I know it's Twitter, okay? The official X account for the Ancient Magus Bride manga, they've announced that it will soon return with a simultaneous internal release in English using AI translation created by the Japanese company Mantra. And when people heard about this, they went absolutely nuts.
Now, I hate that this has been turned into some woke thing, because from an artistic perspective, politics has nothing to do with it. It's they're changing the tone of the series by creating their own script for it. And if you're paying for one thing and getting another, you're really getting stuffed by these people.
Yeah, but that being said, though, if you're doing a translation, it has to be 1-to-1. It can't be just 1-to-10. How would it work? That's like me saying, okay, I'm gonna change the tone of a Lord of the Rings of a line from Lord of the Rings. Would you like it if I were to do that though?
Well, first, Lord of the Rings itself is a translation.
From what?
From the original languages of the Third Age.
Elven, right? Yeah.
Not just Elven, but in the canon of Lord of the Rings, J.R.R. Tolkien is a translator translating these ancient myths.
This is true.
Yeah.
So to completely derail, Earth is Middle Earth, and we are living in the, I think it's the sixth stage.
Whereas the Age of Men.
Yeah, the Lord of the Rings stories that you're used to all happen at the end of the Third Age. And you can have fun with translation sometimes, if you've got permission, like the infamous Ghost Stories anime. They basically handed the translators the anime without a script and said, do whatever you want.
Yes, they did.
And it turned into comedy gold.
It was a classic anime. Well, I think that's mainly to the voice actors that did it. They just said, no, we just do what the fuck we want. And the producer like, yep, go for it. It is a hilarious anime.
Yeah, but That being said, though, also I forgot to tell you in addition to the Magus Bride doing the AI translation, Funimation and an anime company recently merged with Sony. Sony services including Crunchyroll, and the company has indicated it will use a hybrid AI localization system with humans reviewing and editing the results as well. I forgot to add that in.
Hopefully translation AI is better at its job than the upscaling AI we just discussed doing GTA.
Then you gotta consider in what they'll be feeding this AI that does it all.
Yeah.
Goddamn AI is freaking everywhere.
But okay. But in relation with the work stuff, right? With the work stuff, here's the thing: some people just deliberately put it in, though. They put it in, like one of the famous localizers. She has apparently commented on the whole decision, saying that it is disappointing and it is it's a shame. It's embarrassing.
Of course she is, because now she's out of a job.
Yeah. And she also claimed that the machine translation is not yet smart enough to handle television or movies, and suggested that audiovisual translations are already criminally underpaid. And apparently, from what I'm seeing in this article, the salary for translating and dubbing subtitles, it can range between 20,000 to 100,000.
That is an incredible range.
But that being said, some of the some of the woke stuff that some people have put into the anime, there's one incident according to the YouTuber Asmongold who's chimed in on it. And one incident is basically inaccurate subtitles occurred in February when fans noticed several alterations to the anime adaptation of My Life as an Inuki-san's Dog. In the English version of the series, on the second episode, the show's protagonist calls other character Mike, a bimbo. Such unsavory language was never included in the Japanese original. It was
okay. How is bimbo woke?
No,
you're going on about this being woke, but how is bimbo woke? That doesn't sound woke at all.
Okay, I was going. If you can let me finish, let me finish.
No, you're not allowed to finish.
I was going to say, even though it wasn't added into it, but that being said, another person has added in another anime, putting in like what was it? What's the most infamous line? Hang on a second, if I can find it. Oh yeah, so the dub was basically someone wrote these pesky patriarchal society demands were getting into my nerves, so I changed clothes. And even though in the Japanese version was saying, oh, everyone was saying something to me, so I tried to tone down the exposure. I'm going, what the hell? What is this? You get what I mean, Professor?
That is a pretty hefty change. At the same time, translators have to take into account the context and the culture that they're translating for. I don't know the original Japanese, so it could be something in the original Japanese gave them an indication that this was the tone to take.
But the interesting part about this is that this whole thing is a snapshot of 8 years worth of awful politicized English localizations. And this is not only happening in anime. This is also happening in Japanese games as well, interestingly enough. I'll post a link on the show notes. It's from a website called Niche Gamers, who chronicled this entire thing, which I'm not going to go into. But that being said...
Well, the Japanese games thing quite famously led to the creation of the term woolseyism, because the translator, I think his name was John Woolsey, was an American translator for Squaresoft's and SNES RPGs. And his thing was, rather than translating literally, he changed basically everything about the script. And that's where the term woolseyism comes from, for points where he's tinkered with the script. And it's not all his fault that he had to change it, because Japanese as a written language is more compact than English. And the way the languages were encoded, he had to cut the script down to fit it into a SNES cartridge.
Yeah.
But and on the other hand, we get terrible translations, like all according to Kakaki. Translator's note, Kakaki means plan.
Well, I think, like, I don't know, it's like, I think the whole idea of this, putting that, the whole idea of this woke culture, as it's called, into anime, it's got to weaponize the whole translations if it goes too far.
It's gone too far, and the crazy part is when you try and call out the people to do it, they'll go, oh, deal with it, for example. And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, we can deal with that, but the problem is, you say that to in a professional setting, yeah, that's not gonna work, buddy. Like, what's interesting is some people have called out the person that did that translation, and it was, yeah, it was pretty terrible. Even Asmongold, as I said earlier, got into it, and he put his two cents, and yeah, a lot, and it was a bit of a war.
Well,
and the war has gotten so bad to the point where the Japanese are scratching their heads, wondering why the hell are these people translating our works badly. And there is a video I've seen, and some of the comments are put in translation for you. So one commenter in this video said, basically, honestly, politically correct people often do things like using other people's work to make their own points, but I hate it. If you can't respect the original work, please don't get involved. When it comes to translation, the degree of perfection depends on the translator's love for the original work. I want it to be translated by a translator who respects and loves the work.
That is fair. We're going to look at this whole cultural thing, like it's happened with the Netflix series Witcher as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's gone to the point where people can't respect the source material enough anymore.
Yeah, that's like I agree. Like if they don't respect the source material, especially if it's like a classic thing like The Witcher. I read all those books. Those books are fantastic.
Yeah.
I recommend everyone go out and read them. But they disrespect it. That's just not, does not sit right with me.
But what do you guys think though? Like in terms of AI helping out in the translation, like you reckon it would help the help the business or hinder the business?
It could be a bit of A and a bit of B, in my opinion, because the AI has to be fed the words and then adapt as it is, which could lead it down a strange road. Whereas at the same time, if it's going to be more accurate and to the point, I think that's the only time I would ever support AI.
Oh, by the way, here's something interesting for you. Someone made a video doing an AI voice of the same character with the whole pesky patriarchal line. Someone made an AI version of it and did it so much better in terms of redubbing.
And it's dragon mate. Of course it's dragon. I have not watched that anime.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it may feel like it's going to hurt a lot of anime fans, but at the same time, like, which anime fans is it going to hurt? That's going to be another question.
Yeah, because the fan base of anime nowadays it's massive.
It's massive. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and you can't please everyone. I think some of the like most companies and translations in this whole thing, they're always trying to please everyone, which their voice then displeases everyone at the same time.
Yeah, and like you're right, it's massive. And the other problem, and the other part is, even though the anime industry is massive, they're also very reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Like you do something, you change anything in an anime, they can get very mad.
This is true.
I mean, I mean, I'm not sure with like other properties, but anime fans can be, they are a passionate bunch. We are a passionate bunch.
Yeah, but it's all the same with, like I said, with people who like the old, like, again, I go back to The Witcher. there's a huge fan base of that book and those games, right?
Mm.
And then there you go, and go, now screw you guys, and go with our own thing. And that just pissed off a whole lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but...
I think, politics aside, this should never have been a political discussion. And by immediately jumping to calling it woke, these people have done have harmed their point.
Yes.
Really, they should have stuck to the point that the artistic integrity would require an accurate translation, unless it's a scenario like Ghost Stories, where they have permission to make changes.
Mm-hmm. I agree. When it comes to politics, they should stay in politics and out of the more stay out of like the fun things of life: movies, games, anime.
And that's the thing. Like even if you try and tell the people to stop, they'll go, "Oh, I don't care. Like I don't give a shit." I'm like, okay, you want to play that game? Okay, try telling that to a bunch of business people that because at the end of the day, their bottom line is being affected. Try telling that to a bunch of business people. Let's see how that goes. But yeah, but not to mention as well, like, seeing all this mess in the West, the Japanese people at this point are scratching their heads, wondering why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we marketing this to the West?
Anyway, I think we've exhausted this, so I think we should move on, DJ.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So on to our next topic. We're going to be talking about the anti-venom backfire. Now, when you get bitten by a snake, you would trust that the anti-venom would work, right?
I'd hope so.
It should.
Okay. So in this lovely story, there was once a promising drug, an antibody that would counteract a pernicious toxin in a certain viper that lives in Central America and Northern South America. And this is responsible, and that viper is responsible for fatalities each year. Okay. So they tried this, and they were about to market this until the results came in, and it basically destroyed the test subjects that was originally healed.
Yes, it was just 2 days before the author was handing in his dissertation when he realized that he got a call from his collaborators who had realized the antibody, which is to latch onto the myotoxin 2 in the venom and neutralize it, was causing the further damage.
Ouch.
They were treating mice with the antibody, and the mice were dying.
Even though they were fine before, like, that was the funny part.
I'm guessing that along with everything else, snake venom is evolving.
And the crazy part is they tried to modify this thing, and it sort of worked, but it didn't. But it didn't work at the end. They still kept on dying, no matter how many modifications they went through.
Mm. So it could not be. So again, it could. So the venom itself may have been neutralized, but the stuff they put in to neutralize the venom made it worse. Do people still do science nowadays at school?
Oh, so okay, so the hang on a second, let me just have a read there. They're saying when they looked at how much muscle damage the antibody prevented when given the mice to a little after they received the venom, a so-called rescue assay, they found out that instead of reducing the damage, the antibody worsened it and killed the mice. The phenomenon is known as antibody-dependent enhancement.
Hmm.
And the guy that was doing this entire thing, he had to quickly revamp his dissertation to account for the surprise finding. And at the end of it, he goes, "Those were a fun 48 hours." Can you imagine?
I can't imagine finding out 48 hours before your dissertation's due that you've just screwed it all up and you have to start again.
Can you imagine being the professor in that scenario? Just going, imagine I was the student and professor, you were you. I just go, professor, I got some bad news. All the results that I've just sent to you earlier. Yeah, there was a bit of a snag. What can I do?
Yeah, well, it's not a great situation.
No, but on the flip side, they could advance the antibodies, anti-venom research to all get more money into the medical area, which is slowly lacking all around the world. But there is a flip side, but it also is not a positive outcome.
So, someone suspected that the myotoxin 2, which typically attacks the cell's membranes, may be hitchhiking onto the antibodies, giving it greater access to the mice's cells. This occurs with some other pathogens, dengue virus, for example.
Jeez.
They said although this is the first time that the antibody-dependent enhancement has been found in snake venom, scientists have found similar effects for other toxins. So about a decade ago, another scientist found antibodies that enhanced the deadliness of anthrax toxin. But the fact that this antibody switched from being a protective in one in vitro test to being harmful in another is a new intriguing finding, he says, and worth investigating further. You know, this entire story just feels like something out of a horror movie. You know, they're like, oh, we have this super cool new cure. And then it works well for the first few days. And then 1 week later, they just turned into mindless, horrible zombies.
But I think that's just how science works in the end. But it's not like, as I said, it's not a good result.
No.
Yeah, you're right. Even though the results, they said here, even though the initial results are disappointing, they can help guide other researchers pursuing antibody drugs for snake bites. So current treatments, anti-venoms derived from blood of animals injected with toxins, have to be kept cold and cause life-threatening allergic reactions.
Mm.
So the researcher says he hopes that the paper will prompt other researchers to run rescue assays early in drug development to avoid years of work down the drain just before reaching the next step. And he ends it by saying, "We didn't know there was this trapdoor you can fall through this far into the process."
You must have been new to bloody science. There's always footholds and traps everywhere. It's like a bloody dungeon.
One could say he fell for it.
Wow, really?
Terrible.
Very.
Yep, really. But that's going to be interesting, though. Like, you reckon this? What's going to be interesting about this is that it feels like this is the evolutionary step going through. This feels like evolution going like, nah, you think you beat us, but we're a bit better than you guys.
But in like nature, the earth itself, all of that stuff, it's going to always be like three steps ahead of the human race.
Oh yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And we just we stupidly enough either make it happen quicker, like the whole global warming situation. That is still saying it's not real when we know it all is. But nature is you can never tame nature. You just gotta work with it, I guess.
That's true. All right. So that being said, Professor, you got anything else to say before we wrap it up?
No, let's wrap up.
Cool. All right. So on to shout outs. We don't have any shout outs for this week. Sorry, guys. You might like the shout outs. On to our next sub-segment, the wacky movie. And this time we have Free Jack, which came out in 1992. Emilio Estevez took Rene Russo onto a curious look at tomorrow in Jeff Murphy's Free Jack, a movie that had the unfortunate task of casting Mick Jagger as the villain. Audiences weren't all that impressed, but the film does maintain a small but voracious cult following. And here's the plot. Bounty hunters from the future transport a doomed race car driver to 2009 New York, where his mind will replace with that of a dead billionaire. Though it didn't go home with any statues from the 1993 Saturn Awards hosted by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films, Free Jack did enjoy three nominations: Best Costumes, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Science Fiction Film. This film was loosely based on 1959 science fiction novel Immortality Incorporated by Robert Sheckley. This was Mick Jagger's first dramatic movie as an actor since the mid-1980s with Running Out of Luck and Laughter in the Dark. He was cast in the wake of the Rolling Stones' lucrative 1989 to 1990 Steel Wheels tour, which was accompanied by their album of the same name. This film took place in 2009. Interesting fact, Mick Jagger's then-wife, Jerry Hall, played a cameo as a news TV reporter who interviews Alex. I'm just trying to picture Mick Jagger as a villain in a movie like this. Like, can you imagine him going, I can't get no satisfaction.
Okay.
Don't diss Mick Jagger, man. Like, no.
It was weird, though, that
through and through. It is
that
weird
time period in the 80s and 90s when they were hiring rock stars to play villains.
It's because back in, I think it was, no, that was the, so the rock music's whole thing was, I think the 60s, 70s, 80s are always considered as, and I put in quotes, devil music. And it's a load of crap.
I know. There was another prominent rock artist, Alice Cooper, for example. He was featured in a horror movie called The Prince of Darkness by John Carpenter. And, that was a fun movie to watch.
I'm pretty sure that Alice Cooper was like, you know, wanted me to do a horror movie? I'm down with it. He was all about, he liked the old 70s horror movies. This whole thing. Just like Rob Zombie.
Yeah. Like I said, I just can't picture it. Mick Jagger in a horror movie, in a sci-fi horror, though. It's like him strutting around.
Can you
around.
Imagine Sting and David Lynch's Dune?
No, okay, that's I still find that weird. But okay, so with this movie as well, Anthony Hopkins later in his career said it was a very terrible movie. And according to reports at the time of the production interview with some members of the casting crew, the original version of the movie had a disastrous test screening, so producer Ronald Shusett was brought in to reshoot about 40% of the movie and add more character scenes and humor. Emilio Estevez also mentioned how director Jeff Murphy let them down by focusing too much on the action in his original cut of the film. Jeff Murphy claims that there was interference from the production company Morgan Creek, and that he asked for his possessory credit to be removed. And on the episode of How Did This Get Made, it was revealed that Mick Jagger was offered this role 1 week before shooting was scheduled to begin. And he asked to, and he decided to do this on the spot based on the short description of the plot. He also said that if he had given a few months to read the script and think about it, he probably would have declined.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's an interesting thing, but like they've done it in other movies, as Professor picked up. Like even The Labyrinth, they had Bowie as the Golden King, was the villain.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. I was like, I'm sure David Bowie was a villain. I just couldn't remember what.
But did he play well?
Well, he had a say in making of the movie. He said he wanted to have more comedy, and they did that, or he wouldn't play the role.
Anything David Bowie touches is gold.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Always.
Yep. Anyways, that's all we have for this week. Where can they find us, Professor?
I don't know. You never asked me that.
Ah. Okay. I can feel
Twitter,
it.
Twitter, Facebook.
Is it Facebook, Instagram, YouTube? I can remember.
Even that's hilarious. BPM knows it more than you do, Professor. I cannot believe it. They can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. They can also find us on thatsnotcanon.com, where we have an archive of our old episodes. And yeah, so that's all we have for this week. Look after yourself and stay hydrated, folks.
See you next week.
See you, people of the internet. Here we go.
I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.